Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base, recorded live at PAX Prime 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. As you'll notice, this is not a numbered podcast. We're doing a whole special series for you.
Yeah, we're going to be bringing you a total of 12 different podcasts recorded live at the BioWare base this year's PAX Prime. So make sure to click subscribe and enjoy.
So we're going to get started. Thank you all for coming out. This is, let me look at, we are Playable Races. No, just kidding. I knew the whole time. My name's Jessica Marizan. I'm the community manager here at BioWare Edmonton, Montreal. I take care of the developers. Just kidding. They take care of me. I'm going to let them all introduce themselves, and we will start with Matt to my right.
All right. I'm Matt Rhodes. I'm a lead concept artist on Dragon Age Inquisition.
I'm Luke Christensen. I'm a senior writer at BioWare and very tired.
PAX Day 3.
And I am Melanie Fleming. I'm a localization project manager for BioWare.
So Playable Races are back. How exciting are you about that? Now, this panel is being recorded for the folks at home, so... they're listening to this, so actually, let them know how actually excited are you about Playable Races. Come on.
Also, folks at home, take your hands out of your pants.
We have to end the panel now. Where's HR?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Canary.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Big boys.
Yeah, you can imagine how hard it's been to sit on that. Oh, man.
They have horns. That's
they have horns.
So to speak.
Yeah. Which outlines a few romance. No, it's just we're so thrilled. We're thrilled to be able to do it and to talk about it and to get it freaking out there.
Are there any... design aspects that you guys were looking at when it came to how to approach the Canary?
From a visual design standpoint, yes. Because one of the great things was we had we're really happy with the direction that the expanding on the Canary had gone for Dragon Age 2. Especially those horns are looking so cool, and then being able to take what for budget reasons, you know, you could basically only have the one Canary. That was similar to Origins. There was Sten. In this version, there was the Aerishock and the Trooper. But now to be able to go forward and go and say, like, you know, let's get some different looking faces. Well, you've seen some of the stuff about the Iron Bull, but the other Canary character that's out there, horns that are shaped slightly differently. And then for us too, a really great thing. We got the female Canary out through the comics. There's a female Canary character in the graphic novels, but to do the in-game version and to really geek out on physiology and if, you know, some Canary have horns, some don't. Female Canary, some will have horns, some won't, and being able to decide how far those go, what they'll be shaped like, which animals to reference as far as, like, you know, some female species, like horn species, don't have them. Some do. And it's just, yeah, really, really great geeking out on character design like that.
Awesome. So I know that we spoke on a panel yesterday about how, no, there won't be the kind of origin stories that we had in Dragon Age Origins, but obviously each race is going to come with its own set of backgrounds just due to the fact that a human is not going to have the same set of attributes that a dwarf is going to have. Mm-hmm. Luke, without spoiling things too much and have Mike Laidlaw, like, burst through and strangle you, is there anything you can say about how writing is going to come into play with the character and playable races?
A little bit. Well, we had talked about previously we weren't going to have full playable origin sections. We were going to have backgrounds before, and that was before we got our races back. And now we haven't scrapped the backgrounds so much as the races become those backgrounds. So if you're choosing an elf, you'll have a particular background, and it's more in the way we did backgrounds for Shepherd, where it was okay. Here's a blurb about where the background comes from, and that'll inform the content going forward. So instead of playing through the, oh, this is where I come from, you will experience some of the stuff about where you come from and decide how you relate to that. So an example might be like, yes, you come from, the elves come from some of you may have noticed the surnames on the demo that we did. There were surnames in the save game files. And they're getting chewed apart right now and analyzed. Where's this one from? Where's this one from? There are going to be those are names that we picked because they have some of them have a history in our world, and some of them will have a history in the world by the time we're done. And I don't know how much I can talk about, so I'm going to spread it out. So would anyone else like to go now?
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of one thing that I really like about particularly character design, well, overall design, but specifically with characters, is that our followers, and even to an extent the player character, are avatars of this awesome story and representatives of the world as a whole. And the Thedas, the setting for this world is so large, and we know that there are countries and places that are just like, that have just been teased, have just been named. You just get the vaguest reference of. And so even to have, like, the player be a Kunari, that's, you know, the Kunari are one of those things you see bits and pieces, and you're just kind of getting almost like in the dark with your eyes closed, kind of a sense of who they are and what they're about. Being a player, stepping into that role, is just another chance that we're really excited about to just sort of, like, take another step into that mysterious territory.
Is there anything you can say, Mel, about localization, or is it too early to? I know we just got back from Gamescom, and there's so many fans. I was listening to someone who was, I guess there's a character who does the VO for Benedict Cumberbatch, mm-hmm. his character on Sherlock, and does like Fenris's character, and does like mm-hmm. Hawk or something like that. So I know localization is so important to so many of our fans mm-hmm. overseas, and
well, both localization and voiceover production.
Yes,
we're still investigating and finding the characters that the writers are writing, and finding out about them, also the levels that they're going to be present in, and the scenes. The cinematics and digital acting teams are putting together. So there's a lot of, it's actually kind of a fun period for us. It's our kind of exploration phase. We get to look through lots of, not just English actors, but a lot of, find out who's famous in France and who's in Germany, and find out who is an up-and-coming actor in the UK, and find out the accents that we're going to need in English. Find out that even though a lot of the time in movies and games, in localization, say in Germany and France, you don't do accents. Like, I don't have the elves being from Frankfurt and the other guys being from somewhere else in Germany. They all speak German at a basically same accent, but there's still things that you can do. Like, one thing that comes to mind, certainly in Ferelden and in Orlais, is the idea of class and certainly the education level that a noble would have as opposed to, say, a peasant or a handmaid. And you can give that information to the translators and have them know that and translate the person as a peasant mm-hmm. rather than as a noble, and they will sound different in the language. It's an exciting time for us.
Brings up a question I have for you then. Because it sounds like to an extent, I mean, the localization, it seems like there's a spectrum where it's like mm-hmm. there's just straight up translating, but you can get kind of deeper into localization, mm-hmm. where you're finding out culturally there's something, you know, that you may not have picked up on. Or maybe you can't answer that, and we'll talk about it later.
I know.
Backstage
panel.
Would the Canary represent anything already? Like, are there any red flags about localization with them? Like, because, like, these big guys with horns, like, I mean, that means different stuff.
Really. Right? I mean, there's a lot of mythos in a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. There's religions built around it. But it is a very popular thing, our games, in other countries. And, you know, they like playing games, too. And they like characters with horns, and they like characters with big pointy ears. And so we do have a department called, we call it GOPS. It's like geopolitical services that we look for, what you say, like those red flags. Like, for instance, if we have a DLC or a character or a game that has, here's an example. There was a quite horrific tsunami that hit Japan a couple of years ago now. Yeah. And at the time, there was something we were writing. There was a subplot that had some scene of drowning in it. And so we had people we would go and talk to in Asia and give them the plot, give them the data, and say, is this going to... Because we want people to feel and love our games and love the characters and feel something, feel like it matters. But we don't need to wound people more who are already struggling. And certainly I do find that around the world, there are areas we sell games to that are not as free as us, that have our games do have a meaning for them that is beyond just having a good time for 60 hours.
Yeah.
So we do those tests for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On a lighter note than that.
Sorry.
No.
Actually, I can segue you back in. I'll segue this back up. My friend was telling me he watched Iron Man 3 on the plane, and he was like, I feel like I'm missing something. They had cut out the entire scene where the plane blows up and he rescues all the people.
Oh.
For very obvious reasons. So he had to watch it again when he landed.
Wait, how does that segue back into Dragon Age?
Oh, sorry. Well, no, you were saying, like, let's lighten it up. That's, like, localization kind of
okay,
the specifics.
Okay,
and then,
okay. So now that Matt has lightened it up, so what are you guys most excited about bringing playable races back?
Oh, man. I feel fortunate in that, like, with particularly concept art coming very early, is that I already get to kind of play in the sandbox. Mm-hmm. Being able to do illustrations and render things especially when it doesn't specifically matter if the Inquisitor, if she's a dwarf or a Kunari, or if he ends up being an elf, that kind of thing, where you can basically just almost roll the dice. Or just like, you know what, I haven't drawn a dwarf in a while. Like, you know, and being able to just interchange like that is awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to watching Cinny sweat about love scenes.
And horses.
And horses. And horses. Those horses look gigantic.
For me, Thedas is a big place. We have a lot of nations, and so I'm particularly excited to go up to the wall on the fifth floor and look at all the art posted up there and see... It reminds me of like the United Nations, of many nations, very, very multicultural sort of a representation of all of these different places and what they can be, because they can be anything. It's great.
Yeah, actually, speaking of and tied into that is like another thing is for various games, like you get to see screenshots that people take of their characters because rightly so, they're very proud. They poured a lot of time and effort into building these very specific customized characters. I think seeing not just what we're offering, what we're building as far as crafting and customization goes with the armor and color and like all that sort of stuff, but adding races on top of that, it's just going to be like the variety of people's characters. I'm excited to see that start coming in because I never find that, like, that's always fascinating.
I already look at the pictures on the fifth floor and I already imagine their voices in my head and what they could sound like and it's...
And there are some scenes in particular and some places that for an elf to go or for a Kunari to go or even for a human, for anyone to go, they're like, you're basically almost like forcing them into the wrong place. And just to know, like, you can be standing in a position, like, obstinately, like, I'm not supposed to be here, but I am the Inquisitor. it's fun.
Is there anything you guys want glorious people out here. I hate saying audience, but I keep, like, my mind goes to audience. And I'm like, no, you guys are, like, 3 feet away from us. You're not the audience. You're our friends. I don't like saying fans either.
Just say folks. They're all folks. They're our folks.
You don't like me to ramble. No. You're like, stop it. I'm going to produce you right now. Get to the point.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want our friends here to know about Playable Races or information to share before we open it up to Q&A?
We missed them, too.
Yeah.
DA2 was a necessary half step back because we're looking forward to this kind of variance going ahead. I mean, we had some... Coming out of Origins, everybody had the same rig. Everybody walked the same. Everybody moved the same. It was scaled up and down a little bit for tall guys, short guys. But everybody pretty much moved the same. And sometimes that looked really weird. Mm-hmm. And in DA2, we got different rigs, not just for the races, but also the genders, which, you know, magnified the amount of work that went into any given character, especially for the player character, because he is... he or she is this pool of everything that you can do complexity-wise. And we took a hit there. We had to step back from that variance just to get more. And you know, now you're seeing the fruit of that. We've got all these different appearances coming out, and they are going to move like they look. They are going to interact with the world the way they should. And you know, we've had these kind of compromises we had to make, you know, even back on Origins where we did have other races. I mean, you know, we made it a lore thing that, you know, Stan didn't have horns, but our very first concepts for the Canary had horns way back in the day. And the reasons that he didn't have any was, you know, because, well,
look,
it's
at
that
Matt Goldman's face back there. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's that or they're getting cut.
You know, Matt, like you were supposed to be on this panel.
That's your name there, buddy. yeah, so sometimes you have to make these kind of compromises. Like, you know, Stan coming in and we made it a thing about his character, the horn, and other Canary about the horns. But... you know, at the time, it was lose the horns or we're losing the race. It's just mm-hmm. we can't mm-hmm. put it in for technical reasons. And you know, then we overcame those. And now we've got other ones. We overcame those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we got a shiny thing coming out in a year. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be fun.
And that it's really great. I've talked to a few people about this at PAX so far, but that, like, really, like, EA was great in that they were able to actually give us the extra time to do this. They saw what we were doing, and they said, okay, well, we can move some things around, and you guys get it. And one of the major factors, and this is to you guys and to the people listening, that, like, one of the major factors in helping that decision weigh as much as it did was all of the constructive criticism, all of the fan feedback and the yearning and just the expression of that desire. And, like, you see all the fan art and all of that stuff. And it's just, like, the, you know, the outcry of it is heard. And it helps when we go into those meetings and say, we really want to do this. It's important to us and it's important to them. And it's just, yeah. So thank you.
Well, so.
You have gorgeous minds, the three of you. So we have Hillary in the back. She's going to take our mic and answer your questions. Just be patient. If she doesn't get to your question at first, her eyes are looking around.
And I'm sorry for how much I can't tell you.
Well, and we should almost say right away, just so you don't get your arms tired, we can't really talk about romances.
Okay. Yeah. So, and our story is really can't go into story much.
I'm not going to name a voice actor.
We'll do what we can. So, yeah.
Okay, so... Playable races mean customization, and my question is, we have the humans and the dwarves clearly dominating because of their luxurious beds, and the elves being second-class citizens because they can't grow beards and thus they don't deserve to be better. My question is, do the Qunari have...
luxurious beard in the second row. Yeah.
Do the Qunari get sizzling sideburns, manly masks, glorious birds, or are they also condemned to obscurity?
Yeah. I love it. I love it. To answer that, we are actually, it's great because we are really still in an exploration process. And I'll tell you that, I'll just tell you now, there are drawings, that's not a confirmation, but there are drawings of Kanari with cascading beards that tie into braids and all that sort of stuff, which is a lot of fun. So, yeah, it looks awesome. But. And Lord.
So obviously you can't say anything about story, but maybe the vaguest, so as we play as a Kunari, will we learn like a lot more about like maybe where they come from, like even a vague answer or whatever?
To a degree. I mean, all of the racial options will have content unique to them that deals with their specific concerns and place in the setting. So, as a Kanari character, you will be placed in a... Your background will tie into you, all, you know, putting you as the player in a position where you can learn more about that. So it's not just, this character is knows a bunch of stuff you don't, because that's no fun. It's like, you know, giving your guy a bunch of stuff to talk about that you don't actually know the answer to yourself, that doesn't make you feel smart. Makes you feel like your guy's off by himself in the weeds. Well, I'm just piloting this thing. So the backgrounds will have content that allow you to explore the racial backgrounds more than currently exist. How about that?
So since the Kunar and our race... Could we play as the mage class variant of them, or is that still up for discussion?
You can play as a mage Kanari. We're not doing... You know, you don't play as the Sarabas bound mage.
Yeah, you don't get chained up, I don't
think. Yeah,
yeah. I think there's something about player agency there, but...
You'd be the glass cannon for the rest of the Inquisition.
I just want to go to bed.
Okay. I'm sorry. My question is, it's a two-parter. The first part, and I won't name any names, but some games, they have a race. You have, you know, big, the males tend to be big and burly. You can define all sorts of things, like muscle tone or anything like that. But then you get to the females' customization, and, you know, you can change a few things, but they tend to all look, you know, with their hourglass figures, very sexy looking, and you don't get a lot of customization on that. So I didn't know, in the terms of the Kanari, who we've seen a lot of males and they're big and burly and stuff, I didn't know if y'all had any comments about the females and how they might appear. My second question is, if we do play a Kanari and someone messes with us, can we give them the horns?
Oh yeah, there was a discussion last night about the headbutt idea that we really liked. Matt Goldman made sure to write that down, so that'll be a task for me and to storyboard.
I made it a point to let you headbutt a so
yeah,
we'll
yeah. But to the first question, as far as physiology goes, like with the Kanari female, it would be a massive missed opportunity to have them look like a human female. And it's a discussion we've had, and it's a careful balance to strike. But we want them to have a physically imposing. It's a major element of the race. So, I mean, you can look at a lot of. We've been doing research into even just like Olympic swimmers, because you tend to get like the great, almost like the big the triangle
shoulders,
that still looks amazing. So it kind of is able to fulfill both. It's still a matter of balance and sculpting it, but we'll see.
So this is mine in how you were discussing the rigs in terms of character movement. Will not only the genders move differently, but each race move differently as not only outside of combat, but also inside? Like, when I was playing Dragon Age 1, a rogue elf stabbed exactly the same as a human elf, or a human rogue, and then the same thing looked for a dwarf. And so you have a Kunari, which has a completely different fighting style from a human and things like that. How is that going to work out?
Well, I was going to say, I don't know that they would have completely different fighting styles. That is a...
My understanding. Yeah, this is. Both of us are somewhat unqualified, and I know Steve Gilmore is around here somewhere. He's the lead animator. He would. But I, my understanding is that there's more of a leaning to have combat be more determined by the moves that you choose. Mm-hmm. So it's an additional layer of that customization. That whatever skill trees you decide to pursue, that's more what governs your combat animation. Mm-hmm. Whereas like exploration, I think, is a bit more about, you know, the gait and pose, however things work there. Yeah.
And I think some of it, there is also opportunity, but opportunity because of necessity, certainly as we found on Mass Effect, that when your Volus only has legs that are 2 inches long,
yes,
sometimes you need a re for them to climb ladders. So, yeah, there will be ways we work things out.
Yeah.
Okay, this is almost more in the nature of a silly comment I want you guys to shoot down immediately. But as soon as you said you had different rigs for the races and the genders and stuff, I pictured this massive, epic Kunari Inquisitor striding into battle with, about a few seconds later, here come the humans and the elves, and everybody starts looking at their watch, and here comes the dwarf. Okay, I'm here. So... Please tell me that's not going to happen.
No. Dwarves can ride on Kunari horns. That's okay.
I'm picturing Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping up, you know?
No, he'll be the first to arrive being tossed. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is more just a bit of curiosity. You mentioned that in localization, you don't always look to get different accents from one region in a country to another. How have you handled Orlais, which is obviously very French, say in France, where perhaps everybody would sound like they're from Orlais?
It's been interesting, actually. A lot of the names that we use in English for Orlais are of French origin. And so the translators have to translate it into something that has the same kind of feel that will provide, in some ways, a bit of depth and mystery to the story. So we actually give our translators, in some ways, sorry, Luke, a little bit of license with the story so that they can interpret the story in a way that will make sense to the people who are reading it from that culture. They're all native speakers of French, but they speak English fluently, and they know their culture and they know our game IP very, very well. And I'm trying to think of an example. For instance, sometimes we have an example of ideas going forward into the future. Like, for instance, in Dragon Age 2, I believe the Magisters, the French word is Inquisiteur, which is Inquisitor. So I got to sell that one by next year because I have to figure out what I'm going to call the Inquisition and the Inquisitors in French, since we already have canon that basically means that in French. There are some things that we jigger around, we'll say.
In some cases, some language has a high form and a low form.
Yeah.
And while that's not a different accent, technically, it does carry a lot of character connotations to it. So they can use that, and they're...
There's a lot of forms, even caste or class, like
forms of address,
forming a formal address versus an informal address. Like, say in Spanish, you would say usted instead of tú. That kind of thing. We can use that to show the setting and the emotion in a scene, whether it is a informal romance scene with somebody you really know really well, or whether now Ashley's on the bridge with Shepard and she has to be in rank. So there's things we can do with that for sure.
Okay, my question was actually a little bit mechanics related. I'm wondering if we're going to have the opportunity to see, racial abilities. Like, if I'm playing a Kunari warrior, am I going to have the headbutt ability where I charge into battle and fling somebody off of my horns? Or maybe a special spell that only, you know, the Dalish teach their elven mages? Are we going to see any of that mechanically, or is it going to be all the same based on class?
To be determined. we're investigating all sorts of things.
Yeah,
we're investigating that now. So
sound like the FBI up here every pant leg.
I'm
currently under investigation.
I think that would be a really good way to make them stand out. But we're investigating whether that's, you know, how far we can go.
So yesterday at the Inquisition panel, When you were talking about playable races for the first time there, you showed the models of a lot of faces options up on the screen, mm-hmm. and I noticed that the elf one didn't look quite as alien as it did in Dragon Age 2. Is the elf going to look... What is the aesthetic facial features of the elf going to be more like in Inquisition than number two?
Yeah, no, I would say not to echo Luke too much here, but that it is something that's still under investigation. I mean, there's various sculpts and stuff like that, but I would say too that you know, human faces, we want elven faces to be just as diverse. Like, really, that there's an element of, you'll see all kinds, even look around the room, like, you know, there's so many different face shapes and nose types and eye shapes and all that kind of stuff. So, there are some faces that it works really well with, to have, you know, like the nice flattened bridge and different shaped eyes and different shaped lips, that kind of thing. And Ramil's sculpt of the elf in Game Informer was gorgeous. So, yeah, it's still being discussed and being, you know, like, various forms are being built, so ongoing.
Is there anything that from previous games that were included that now you're looking at, since all these races are playable, you're like, man, I wish I hadn't had that in the previous games, or I'm glad this was left undiscovered so this can be introduced now?
Personally, I'll answer this first. It's just that, like, from a design point, I actually really like being worked into a corner, because there's something about limitations that gets you thinking really creatively. And if it turns out you've blocked off a bunch of paths, then, like, you have to just bend your brain to find the other one, and that's a really fun exercise, infuriating sometimes, but really fun. I don't know if you.
I would agree with that. That's Lego.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm more impressed by the micro scale. I've got seven pieces, and I convinced you it was something. As far as things that were undiscovered or things that went in that we didn't want, I don't think there's anything that we didn't want. I'm interested in turning a couple of things that I'm going to turn some things on their head. Ooh, that, you know, some things may not be what you expect them to be. Dun dun dun. There are things that seem very familiar about some of our some of the elements of our lore that I think have a few surprises left in them that will be very satisfying for a lot of people.
Hi, wondering about horns on player character Kunari. Will they be optional? And if so, will anyone in the game comment on that? Like, if you don't have horns.
Well, I think from a design, visual design standpoint, again, it's still being explored. But I think in my head, and again, this is not a confirmation, but I imagine the system would work best as you can sift through hair styles for any character, and that to be able to make it an additional thing of, like, having a few maybe different horn shapes and no horn, and to be able to make that adjustment. We'll see if that works.
I had a question.
Oh, there was another part to that. Sorry, I missed the second part of your
question. Would people react?
Oh, yeah. It seems like with the Kunari, it's kind of built into their presence in the world and how they understand you. But at some point...
We'll have to investigate how well we can reflect the... Because that's kind of along the lines of will they comment on your different styles of hair?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is not something that we have tried to track to this point.
Yeah.
If you're a Kunari, we may be able to just get by on the fact that you're, 7.5 feet tall.
This is true.
And, like, and
one thing, like, from the writing side and from the art side, we have to kind of think of it as, like to us, that's, like, a Kunari would be completely bananas. But to the people of the world of Thetas, they know they exist. Even just in, you know, like... At the most, if it's like a children's story or something like that, like they have presence in the world, so may not be as surprised. And like Luke said, as like hair,
A good chunk of the people in the setting have only experienced Kunari through the notoriously biased writings of Brother Jin at TV, and so they're not going to know what to make. A lot of people are not going to know what to make of you, whether you got horns or not. So we will be playing off the races in that way, but I don't know if quite to that level yet. So we'll see.
I had a question about the feasibility of the different sizes and different sizes of rigs. For example, you have a Kunari who's, you know, 7 feet tall. His horse would have to be pretty sturdy versus and pretty large. Versus if you pick a dwarf, are you going to be riding a pony or take a ladder out to mount it? Because how's that going to work?
Under investigation. No, I know one of the big things is that I know this is was JP's nightmare for sure, but like even in cinematics, the idea of varying heights, and that's one of the challenges and the added costs of having dwarves versus humans, and like where does the camera point when you have a conversation?
So I want the sound of an apple crate being dragged in, and then your dwarf just kind of rises into frame. And then... And then he can end every scene with a very flamboyant, "How do you like them apples?" And it's just, it'd be awesome.
Love it. Yeah, I've ridden horses though as a few characters, and it's awesome.
Hey, so I was wondering if you could talk briefly about some of the challenges you faced in cultivating interesting gender roles or cultural norms with your different races. And how you can balance that with the need to, you know, retain player agency for different gender race combinations when you allow the player to step into those shoes.
That can be a tricky one because there's only so many words you can put into the player's mouth before they're no longer theirs. You know, and so there are some assumptions that we can make that the player understands about their character so that, you know, it seems natural that I speak this way about blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But other things, the dark corners of our lore, we've got to find a way for you to experience them as a first-timer as well as your character doing that so that it doesn't seem completely just wrong. Like, you shouldn't be the only person in the world who doesn't know blah about your people because that's just part of your everyday experience. But there's other things that even the people who think they know what they're doing have to go digging for. And that is a tricky balance because, how much do you show?
Well, there's opportunities. Like, for instance, I always loved Varric and his introduction and his path because I don't think he grew up in a traditionally kind of Orzammar. He was sort of surface dude, and the juxtaposition of that guy gives you the opportunity that you need to kind of explore that a little bit, to kind of go, well, so you didn't come from underground.
Yeah.
I think you know that the instant you see Varric. That's built into Goldman! I was right, wasn't I?
My boss!
What the hell was the question?
Yeah.
And now for something completely different.
Well, very combo breaker!
My question is simply, would we be able to play a Dalish mage?
Yes. And I can mention, yeah, we are exploring, I lied before. Backgrounds and races, that's part of it. We are also investigating that maybe a mage character is different enough that they also need a particular background track that might serve them better than just human or, you know, that. So we're looking at how much of a difference that needs to be, especially given the nature of the giant freaking hole in the sky and the stuff that may have led to that.
So this is a bit of TMI Taz moment, but I hate feet.
Me too.
And
feet are gross.
Yeah, they're gross, and I like shoes. And the elves did not wear shoes.
No.
And DA2, please tell me that the elves... we'll wear shoes because it's really gross thinking about them walking around Ferelden with no shoes on.
I'm looking at Matt.
It's funny because I just drew a female elf inquisitor that was actually up on stage at the panel. And she had no shoes. Yeah, that's right.
Can she have tunnel
polish? I'll tell you, it's one of those things that in terms of being able to give the elves more of, like, just pushing them farther into their, like, deeper into their culture. I mean, it really was the idea that, like, elves just have more of, like, this just connection to things. It's kind of the classic sort of trope at this point. And that was just one of the ways that, like, they kind of almost even walk in a different way than we do. And so the fact that they wouldn't eat, I mean, we're not Tolkien, but, I mean, even the fact, you know, Legolas can walk across the snow and all that kind of stuff, it's like, why would you even... If you're on the lower end of society, you don't have that much to give, like, to begin with. Why even put those into your budget, really? But then even on the Dalish side, being able to walk through the forest and, like, know more about what's going on around you, and yeah.
I'm with Jessica. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, that's
just
okay.
Just imagine, like, mushrooms growing off of them. Actually, that'd be really cool if mushrooms could grow off of them.
Yeah.
I think I'd like feet more.
See, I think, I don't know, I think they'd just, in a way, be cleaner, because then you're avoiding, like, trench boot from running across, like, all of it is when you...
We should write a blog about Dalish feet.
Yeah. Sure, go for it.
So I have this dilemma where I can't not pick an elven mage, I think. But I really want to be a Qunari. So one of the things I really like about Dragon Age is that you can pick the character you really want, but you can play all the characters by, like, bouncing around in your party. Can you say if there's a giant Qunari that you can have in your party that you're going to meet at some point? Is that allowed to be said?
I don't know.
We've shown a character that was a Qunari that you are likely to meet in some fashion and perhaps spend some time with.
in he's also in pretty some giant. Fashion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a big'un.
But we're investigating.
Under investigation.
The concepts are really good. You should go look at those.
Also, poor elven mages. It's like double the hate.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
So my question is, like in Mass Effect, when you're choosing your shepherd, you choose if they're born on, like, a colony or on a ship or on Earth. Is there some sort of thing where you can, like, choose, like, say you make a human character, if they're born, like, in Orlais, Ferelden, or Antiva, and if that would, like, make a difference in cutscenes or people, like, would it react differently to you?
Like I said, we're going more with the race and possibly mage being the deciding factor for that choice itself. So, because Shep's always human, of course, but he had this branch of three. And we did some reactivity. We could have done more, but we did some. In this case, it's more of a single blurb about the background. It's not a super defining specific thing, so we don't think that'll feel too limiting. You know, like, oh, I only get one, because what we're doing is building more content forward that will allow you to better define who you are and how you came out of that background, so that even though, yes, the players who picked the mage, they all have the same small blurb that they start with, they will diverge fairly drastically to an extent that is still under investigation. But yeah, we're it's less about looking back, but it's more about how much you can define what you are through the extra content you're going to get.
So, I'm right next to the speaker. I had two questions, I guess. First is just, in the past, dwarves cannot be mages. I'm assuming that's staying around, which makes me very sad. Second one, in the past, you've been able to specialize into being a blood mage. Can the Inquisitor be a blood mage?
We are investigating. Slightly more satisfying than that. We know that it has always been very awkward that you can become a blood mage with the press of a button. And, oh my gosh, the supposed threat and terror of that that is supposed to come along with that is not to be found for the player character because he is exempt from that because of content I would have loved to show you, but is, you know... So we are investigating making the concept of a blood mage threatening again from a player perspective. With, you know... through a bunch of different means. We'll see how that goes. But we don't want it to be a button push.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about this in a panel yesterday for LG... I'm going to mess up this acronym. LGBTQ. Thank you. How is, in terms of character creation, how is gender going to play into this? I don't know how much you can talk about this, but is it just going to be options of male, female? Are there going to be other options available or multiple options available? It's kind of a complicated question to ask, but I'm really curious about it.
Well, you can say we took a lot of notes during that meeting. I hate to say we are investigating, but, you know, certainly I think we said yesterday in our large panel that you can play, there are four races, and you can play male and female in any of those. As far as other characters, we'll see.
Where is that? She?
I don't know.
Oh,
she's
over
there.
Okay.
She's running.
So on the topic of the first question with regards to facial hair, will Lady Dwarves ever have that as an option? Given the token-esque reference earlier for elves.
I did, but maybe Luke can speak more to this. That, like, that Tolkien didn't write Dragon Age? Is that a part of our lore? Has that ever been established? I don't know if that's ever been established. Maybe there's an expert out here.
I believe Mr. Gator at one point long ago may have said, I don't want any bloody Scottish dwarves in my game. So he's not that there's anything wrong with being Scottish. I'm in localization. But our dwarves are our dwarves and not Tolkien's dwarves.
So my question is something that we've danced around a little bit, is that we know from the previous games that the Qunari have very set gender roles and caste system and such. So I'm wondering if that will ever come up, if the Inquisitor is a female Qunari or a Qunari mage, if that's even possible.
Oh, it'll come up.
That would be like the biggest missed opportunity.
Yeah, no, it'll come up. I can't go into how, but yeah, it's such a big thing for the lore of the most complicated part of their culture, the most challenging part of their culture, and yeah, you'll that'll come up.
So hi. Let's do one more question after this.
So my question associates with the culture of the Qunari, and what kind of ideas have you gotten drawn on when designing them? Like, what other, like, real-world cultures, you know, philosophies have gone into that specific race? Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the Qunari are a really fun one, and having the opportunity to do more with them has been really great, because... to put it in general terms, and this isn't exactly it, but a lot of what we've been drawing from has been a mix of a smearing of Japanese, Japanese and West Coast native design languages, things like that. Those two, the idea of like cultures that are close to the ocean have kind of more of a relationship with seawater, but also then, you know, those ideas of Middle Eastern concepts of war and poetry and that kind of thing. And so all of those things kind of get blended in, plus various things that we've seen yesterday that were really exciting, or you know, whatever it is like that. But
from a writing standpoint, I don't want to get into specifics, not because that would be, you know, that for some people that would be loaded, but it's not just that. It's because there aren't actually a lot of specifics that we draw from there. They're a mishmash of extremes that we pulled from all over the place that we tried to beat into this mindset that would appear really alien and hard to wrap your head around for anyone. I mean, that's on, you know, the theme of the day, unsatisfying answers. we pulled from extremes from a lot of places and tried to make that equally uncomfortable for a lot of cultures.
Things that would be purposely hard for people to understand or to accept or to have that inclusion.
In now draw that.
Yeah, go. Run. <I'll>
draw. Yeah.
Plus they have cannons.
All right, last question. Hillary, you didn't have their last question prepared.
Goodness. Last question of what has become the Canary panel. Speaking of Canary again, I just want to express on behalf of what amounts to an interest group on Tumblr that people we acknowledge sexual dimorphism, but people also want female Canary with giant horns. So I just wanted to express that. That would be nice.
Noted.
What a wonderful way to end the panel.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. Do you have any parting words?
I don't think so. Actually.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you guys for coming.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what you guys do with them.
Yeah.
So with that, we have some hangout time.
And that brings us to the end of this episode's BioWare-based panel coverage. We hope you enjoyed listening.
Thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate or Facebook/NerdAppropriate. Email us directly. That is Matt, Hillary with one L, Scott or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. And we have over 100 episodes to check out. So definitely subscribe and let us know what you think. Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.